Welcome to Aspects of Riding with your host, James Kelly. For the next 60 minutes, we'll explore every aspect of riding, including how to create, format, and even sell your work. Now, let's get writing. Here's your host, James Kelly.
Hello and welcome to Aspects of Writing. I'm your host, James Kelly, and my co-host for today's show is Janet Corsi. And our guests are Joy Lynn M. Ross and Ned Barnett. And the topic of the show is how to present yourself as an author. And our first guest is Joy Lynn Ross. And Joy Lynn is the owner of Path to Publishing. Joy Lynn, please tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got into publishing.
Well, I am Joy Lynn M. Ross. I am the CEO and founder of Path to Publishing. And how I got into publishing was through reading and then through writing, becoming a self-published author, then landing a book deal with St. Martin's Press.
Wow.
And then from there, I guess they say the rest is history, but I guess it's the present too because I'm still in the publishing industry and I love it.
I know a little bit about you because I went to one of your seminars, and I know that you actually started selling your books out of the back of a car.
I did.
Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Wow.
And how, and really you did phenomenal with that. So let's talk about that.
Yes. You know, when I wrote that first book, I didn't know anything about getting a book deal with the majors. I just wanted to get my story out there. So I self-published this book. And, you know, I hate to say it now. No, it's part of my story. I guess I don't hate to say it. I like people to know where I came from. I like to be very transparent. It was a piece of crap.
Well, yeah.
The book was on an 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper, and the spine was a spiral-bound plastic comb that I purchased from Staples Office Store.
Hey, I've done a book
We've
like that.
We've done it.
So I'm not alone. Misery loves company.
No.
Yay!
Yes. I'm going to tell you something. There's an author named John L. Long who actually introduced me to Jan.
Yep.
And his first book that we put out there, it was called Brainless in Las Vegas, Do's and Don'ts or something like that.
Yeah.
And we published that in the office exactly like you're saying, printed the on the printers in the office and did spiral bound, and he sold out his first edition.
And you know, I sold out my first edition, and then I said, okay, now I can afford a real printer.
Okay,
but what I couldn't afford was four color process. So it's black and white. It's this black and white book, and I printed 1,000 copies, and I sold those books like nobody's business. And then I was able to get four color process. And this is a book of, you know, short stories and anthology. And finally, I said, okay, it's time for me to put out that big novel. I mean, real authors write big 300-page books,
we do.
Come on, it was time for me to become a real author. So I put together that book, but with this time, I was going to self-publish it. I knew that. But while I was self-publishing it, I wanted to make sure I was pitching it to the major publishing houses in New York. Nobody thought about boutique publishing back then and things of that nature, your hybrid publisher, your partnership publishing. So I'm pitching it to the major publishing houses, but I'm selling it out of the trunk of my car. I sold 12,500 copies out of the trunk of my car, my self-published book, because I knew how to present myself as an author.
And where were you when you did this?
I was in Columbus, Ohio.
So you're from Columbus, Ohio.
I am from Columbus, Ohio originally, yes.
All right, give us a little bit of your background prior to becoming an author.
Prior to becoming an author, I was a writer. I was a reader. I was a paralegal. I have always been torn between law and literature.
Okay.
I was going to go to law school. I took the LSAT. I got my letters of recommendation. I toured the law school. But then I said, wait, if I go to law school, I'm not going to have time to do my creative writing. I'm going to be doing a whole lot of writing. But
so
not
you
the
were serious
writing.
About the writing.
I was serious. I was torn between law and literature.
Wow.
So I opted to become a paralegal.
Okay.
So that I could write.
Yeah.
So that I could write.
Yeah.
So before I became this world-renowned author, which I've written under several names, my first self-published pieces were put out under the name Joy Lynn Jossel, my maiden name.
Okay.
And then that gritty urban street lit, you know, I have to say, sometimes we hop on the bandwagon. So the street lit, the urban lit. That's what was really popular. And I said, hey, I've lived this life. I can write about this life. You know, so it wasn't fake and phony. I wasn't making it up.
Right.
I was able to write about it. From this, so I wrote under the name Joy, J-O-Y, because I'm going to be writing this gritty stuff. I need to just be Joy.
Right.
You know, Joy. Right. So yeah. I was Joy, J-O-Y. And then from there, long story short, I got invited to church. I met Jesus, and I could no longer write the stuff I was writing before.
Ah.
So then I became best-selling author Ian Joy.
Okay.
From there, I dug up a 15-year-old manuscript that was a children's story, and I pitched it to a children's publisher. I ended up getting a book deal under the name N. Period Joy. That book, The Secret Olivia Told Me, has sold over 100,000 copies.
Oh, wow.
Great. Yes.
Fabulous.
It received the American Library Association Coretta Scott King Honor. Scholastic Books picked it up. So it's just been an amazing ride.
Yeah.
Yes, it
yeah.
has. It yeah. has. A literary
right.
journey indeed.
So now we're going to get a little bit about Ned. So Ned Barnett, give us your background. Where were you born? What did you do before you got into this?
Okay, I'm originally from Cleveland. We're both from Ohio.
Ah,
go Bucks!
And I, when I was 15, I moved to Atlanta. So you and I have that in common.
12 years there.
Mm-hmm. And I always wanted to be a writer. From the time I was in high school, I wanted to be a writer. I went to journalism school because that's how you learn to be a writer, at least I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And then my first job out of college was as a writer for an insurance company doing their in-house publications.
Oh.
And my next job was to be an editor for the governor of South Carolina for their economic development publication. And that got me a chance to write speeches for the governor as well, which was kind of a trip.
Yeah.
And I kept writing. And finally, in 1982, I was asked to write a book. I didn't pitch it. Like you did, Joy, I was asked to write
who,
this book.
Who asked you to write the book?
Hospital Corporation of America.
Okay.
They wanted me to write their guide for public relations. They had 457 hospitals. Most of them had no PR person. Mm. They wanted me to create a basic guide to public relations so the boss's secretary could do PR for the hospital.
And so you wrote that book?
I wrote that book.
All right.
Funny story. I wrote it, and I kept a carbon copy. This is back when they were still tight.
Carbon? Some people are going, carbon? What's carbon?
Right. I gave them the manuscript. A year later, they came back to me. 14 people had edited it in 14 different colors of ink, and most of the edits were contradictions. So Bob said this. Joe said, no, do it this way.
Yeah.
And then Sam said, no, do it this way. I started trying to put it all together, and after 2 weeks, I realized it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So I set aside for a month. And then I pulled out the carbon, gave it back to him, and said, here it is, the final copy. And they published it just as I'd originally written it.
Oh, my God.
After all that. Yeah, it's interesting. That's interesting through the whole process.
Wow.
I've gone through a lot of processes with editors and editing. And yeah, I know.
And and then the American Hospital Association saw that I had written this. They asked me to write their basic guide to hospital public relations, which I did. Then one of the investment houses that did books on investments wanted me to write about the five largest for-profit hospital companies. This was brand new at the time. That book sold for $1,200 a copy.
Wow.
And it was spiral bound just like yours.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my heavens.
You know, because it was just information.
Right.
And that got me going. And then I started writing books about the business of hospital public relations and hospital marketing, which was brand new. And my biggest book ever was one that was called The Basic Guide to Hospital Public Relations. It sold for $497 a piece.
My goodness.
Sold out the press run, and then one of the pharmaceutical companies bought it and produced another 1,000 and gave them away to hospitals.
So you were successful already.
I was successful, and because I'd negotiated all my own deals, and because they weren't selling until I started promoting them myself. Like you, they wouldn't publish any or promote anything, and I started promoting my books, and they were selling it. Three of my publishers retained me to promote their other authors, and then I also opened a literary agency because I knew how to negotiate book contracts.
Uh-huh.
So I got into the promoting other people's books, helping them get contracts with Simon & Schuster and things like that. So I've been involved in publishing all my life. I stopped writing books for a while I was helping other people write their books as a coach, as an editor, and things like that. And just in the past year, I have started a novel that I'm excited to get out. My last novel was a science fiction novel from 2003, so it's been a while.
What was that book?
It was called The Kelly Incident, and it's about a fictionalized retelling of a real UFO sighting that occurred in 1955 in Kelly, Kentucky. And my late wife, who was my co-author on the book, her cousin was one of the 26 people involved with it. So we had inside information. And it was also a romance, which was kind of an interesting thing for me. That was Carol's part. She wanted to really get into the romance side.
So you got to throw something in there.
Yeah, it was a nice romance, but it was basically just a fictional retelling of a real thing. This past winter, I wrote a book on why people ought to write a book, how they can do it, and then how to leverage the book into profits that have nothing to do with sales. And then about half is about marketing the book using tried and true old marketing techniques that people think, oh, that's old, that doesn't work anymore, it's got to be digital. No, these things really work, whether it's talking with the press or having events or book signings. People overlook that, and yet this is a way of selling books. And I think you've talked with a number of people who host book signings and understand how important it can be for the authors. So that's what I'm going to do. And this nonfiction book, Joy is going to be publishing it.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. It's going to be her second book. Her first book is the one she's written.
Yeah.
That we're very excited about. It's a fantastic book. And it's based on the conference that you had.
Yes.
So why don't you mention that?
It's Act Like an Author, Think Like a Business, Ways to Achieve Financial Literary Success.
I've had a few authors on who actually went into writing or being an author for financial gain. Usually people write because of the joy. I write because it's just something I enjoy doing. It's not something I've ever thought I'm going to sell. Well, maybe at one time I thought I'll sell a million copies. Most people don't think that way, but more and more I'm finding more and more authors are saying, I actually had one author who actually went through the whole journey of what genre should I write. He went out there and he checked out what's selling the best, and, you know, and how easy it is to market this certain genre, and he actually chose what he writes based on that.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? The biggest mistakes, and I wrote a post about this last week, one of the biggest mistakes authors make is using the reason why they write as the reason why they publish and why they sell. Three different thought processes.
Yeah.
Why you write has nothing to do with why you sell a book and profit from it.
And one of the things that's in my forthcoming book, it was this thing that triggered it, is that I ghost wrote a book for a client, and the deal was I'd get 10% of all the sales, which was, I expected it to sell well. It is in an area that I understood very well. I knew the market. She decided rather than to sell it, she was going to give it away as a door opener. So,
so there's no progress.
No royalties.
But, Ned, I've been down that road, too.
She gave me a pity check of $500, and that was it. But she also sent me a box of books. So I was meeting with a group of doctors here in Henderson, Nevada, and for a business deal that I could tell was going nowhere. When doctors look for investors, you know they don't really believe in it because they can underwrite it out as petty cash.
Right. So I knew
that wasn't going anywhere. But I gave them a copy of the book because they were doctors, and the book was about how to market a certain kind of medical practice. A week later, they called me and said, we're not going to do that. And I said, I knew that you weren't going to. Mm-hmm. But we're starting this other book, and we want you to help us. Well, we struck a deal that week, and for the next 24 months, I got between $5,000 and $7,500 a month every month.
Wow.
Plus, they put me and my wife on their health insurance policy, which was...
That's worth a lot.
It was really there. So I made, for a book that never sold, I made $151,000 plus health insurance. That inspired me to write this book about why everybody should write books, even if they have them ghostwritten, and how they can use them to bring new clients, get profitable speaking opportunities. Mm. You know, here in Vegas, this is Convention Center USA.
Yeah.
They should be speaking at those conventions and doing other things that are profitable that have nothing to do with selling the book.
I need to hire you as my PR person.
I did.
You've got my card right here. I'll be glad to help you.
Okay. We discussed that earlier today.
I know. All right, so the topic of the show is how to present yourself as an author. And there's a lot of different ways. You just mentioned several. You know, we all think that it's just going to the bookstore and standing there and selling your book. That's not the only way you present yourself as an author. You just mentioned several ways you can present yourself as an author. And I like what you brought up about the books that are selling for $495 or, you know, $1,200 because a lot of people can't fathom that. But when you're in the tech industry, you're writing for a specific audience.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's a limited audience. So you're charging that because it is a limited audience in order to make anything from it.
Right.
The $497 book was priced because our target audience, which was hospital assistant administrators, had a $500 approval level. So they could approve on their own a $497 book. So that's how we were able to sell
come up with that figure
2,000 copies of it all together.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. I want to go back to Joy Lynn, and I want to talk a few minutes about selling the books out of the back of the cart. So many people are afraid. They'll write a book, but they're afraid to go out there. And I'm one of them who's afraid to go out there and do speaking engagements or pitch that book to someone. I did an event you were both at, and I was terrified. I can sit here and talk to you on the on the microphone. That's easy. Or I can talk in front of 1,200 people, but I cannot talk to my peers, and that's really difficult. And when you're going to a bookstore, if in my case, I know everybody in town pretty much when it comes to different things. You know, I have to do that. As the author, now I'm speaking as the author, not the radio host. Mm-hmm. I have to do this, and I have to do that. So what did you do to sell those books out of the back of your car? What did you do? And when we say out of the back of the car, we're not, you didn't necessarily open the tailgate and start selling books. I mean, you actually went
sometimes
to the store.
Sometimes I did.
Well, and I actually represented an author who did that, by the way, and she did okay.
Yeah, you know, with authors, our books have to speak for us, but we must speak for our books. Mm-hmm. We cannot hide behind our books.
Right.
Our books is a part of our story. It's a part of our lives. It's our legacy. Mm-hmm. And so if we're not going to be the biggest cheerleader of this product, because it's a product.
Yes.
The book is a product. Yep. Being an author is a job. Mm-hmm. Publishing is the business. Mm-hmm. So again, that ties into presenting yourself as an author. This is my job. These are my duties. This is the job description.
Yeah.
I always say, if you couldn't swim, you wouldn't stand on the diving board and dive into 9 feet of water unless you've hired a coach, a professional, someone to teach you how to swim.
Right.
Forget about the lifeguard. I don't want to jump in and hope he saves me.
Right.
You know, I want a professional to teach me how do I swim.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Or we'll self-taught.
Yeah.
You know, sink or swim, that whole thing. You're self-taught. Yeah. I would never suggest anyone diving into the literary ocean without first learning how to navigate the waters. You never take a job unless you've researched the duties involved, the job description, putting yourself out there, speaking for your book, that is one of the job duties, the description of being an author. It's a job. It's a job. I know we just wanted to write this book. We wanted to get this message out there, this thought, this idea, this concept. But that is the task itself.
But you know the problem, Joy Lynn, is a lot of authors, and I'm no different. Mm-hmm. Some of us are led into this field. Like, I started writing when I was a junior in junior high school, and I didn't write anything serious that someone looked at until I was 21. And then I was writing as a hobby, so I didn't even think about what they had looked at as being a serious piece, which was, by the way, a pilot for a television series, and they had come back and asked me to write 16 episodes. But I didn't realize how serious that was. I just thought it was a hobby. So when we start down that road of writing, and in my case, for instance, I just was more interested in getting the book out there, and I thought it would sell itself. I thought I'd just go and get it on the shelves, and someone would come in and buy it. I really didn't understand that concept at all. And that's who we're talking to here when it comes to presenting yourself as an author, because you wrote the book, you are an author, but now you have to go out there and present that book.
Absolutely.
It's no longer the book is going to sell itself.
Absolutely. And once you know better, I mean, the old saying, once you know better, you do better.
Right.
So once you realize, hey, build it, and they don't come unless you market it.
Right.
You know,
right.
Unless you promote it. Once you are, you realize that, and it doesn't take but two or three book signings when you run out of first, second, and maybe a third cousin may show up.
Right.
Then after that, it's just you not necessarily sitting behind the table, because I'm one of those people. I'm standing. I'm snatching you up. You may have come in this store to buy Stephen King, but by golly, when you leave, you're leaving with a Joy Lynn Ross book.
And that's what you just said is important. Debbie Federico at one of the Barnes & Nobles here said to me, one of her guys who worked there come up and said, you have an author, but he just sits there behind the table. and you know, you need to tell them to stand up. And I learned then, you know, you've got to stand up as an author. You've got to make yourself presentable. You've got to greet the people as they come through the door. Put that book in their hands.
Yes.
Maxwell Alexander Drake is a local author, and he does well at the events because that's what he does. He doesn't just sit there behind that table. He gets up and he walks out there and he hands them the book. Have you seen my latest novel? You know,
yeah.
And you kind of have to do that. You have to be a salesperson.
I call that the puppy syndrome.
Yeah, Drake.
Hand them that puppy.
Yeah.
You're going to love that puppy so much. You're going to talk that puppy up. Not how cute the puppy is, but all the great things the puppy's going to do for their lives. How that cute little puppy is going to change their life. Forget about how great it is. Forget about how great your book is. Nobody cares about how great your book is or how great you are. They want to know, what are the great things it can do for me? How can this book change my life?
And you said you know Maxwell.
Oh, I know Drake, yeah. He's remarkable. I bought both of his books. He was standing up when he sold them to me.
Yeah.
And I would say both of his books on writing. He's got two books on writing that he's self-published. He's also written science fiction fantasy that's been royally published, and he's worked in television and a lot of other areas. But the man is a consummate salesman. Mm-hmm. I say that in the best possible sense,
right. Mm-hmm.
Is that he delivers quality, and then he turns around and sells you the book that explains that quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Got to back it up.
Yeah. And, you know, that's hard for an author to learn to do. I mean, it really is something it's kind of like you said, you have to do your research. You have to learn. Some people it comes natural, but not for everyone.
I have a client that I helped her write a book last year. She'd never written a book before, 25 years old, had some really good ideas. But what she understood was marketing. When we got the book finished, she had a book launch party and she had 300 people show up. She sold 170 books. She made around $4,000 in one evening.
Wow.
Now, every invitation that she sent out was handwritten and personalized. 500.
Oh, that's nice.
500 invitations. And that's why 300 people showed up.
Yeah. Now, that is really a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, she also has shirts. I have several. She has ball caps. My wife and I both have them. Mm-hmm. The ball caps have the name of the book, which is Live in the Dream, and it's just something that philosophically Lynn and I both feel comfortable about, so we wear the ball caps. When we wear all caps, we're wearing hers. But she's got products that present her as an author, which is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
She has stuff that, you know, Live in the Dream t-shirts, Live in the Dream hats, Live in the Dream coffee mugs, pens like you've got, pens that have that on there. Mm-hmm. She's always presenting herself as an author.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said, I'm going to go where the audience is. Last summer, she spent 6 days in Iceland and sold a lot of books.
Oh.
She goes all over, which is what she always wanted to do. She wanted to travel the world. So she's going all over, and wherever she goes, she's selling books, which makes the trip tax deductible, which is kind of nice. For those authors who want to do a business, like Joy Lynn says, think tax deductible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If you're selling a book and you have to travel, write down your mileage.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what you've got to do. You've got to have the hats, the shirts, the coffee mugs, the pens, things that say, oh, yes, I'm an author. Here's a pen of mine.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Get back in touch with me.
Yes.
At least have business cards that say author. My business cards say author on them.
Mm-hmm.
Joylyn's business cards say author and publisher on them. Mm-hmm. These are things that we do. And people who pick them up know who we are.
I don't even know what my business card says.
You have to be a walking commercial.
Yeah.
You have to be a walking commercial.
Exactly. You have to put yourself out there. Another thing that you can do, which I encourage my clients to do, is to put yourself out to conventions.
And, yes.
And here's a trick that I learned with an author from 20 years ago. He was broke. He came to me. He was waiting for his advance. He was broke. He said, what can I do? I'll get you a speaking gig. I wrote to a convention that was coming to town. It was the last minute. I said, basically, you know, there are three things in life you can count on: death, taxes, and one of your speakers is going to cancel at the last minute.
Yes. Just like radio guests.
Just like radio.
The very next night, he was speaking for pay at a conference.
Ah.
So this Las Vegas is the convention center of the world, but everywhere has conventions, and mostly they'll have an organization that helps conventions come to town, helps them find the local vendors. They'll have the name of the convention. They'll have an email address. You can contact the people and do it. Whether you're in Las Vegas or Las Cruces, New Mexico, you're still going to be able to do this. And if you're not doing it, ask yourself why.
Yeah.
If you can get paid to speak, and then at the end, you'll be able to sell their book and sign them.
Right.
Yeah.
After they've heard you. Little tip here, have the convention provide somebody who will take the money for you so that you can focus on talking to the people who want to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you're doing business, you don't have time to talk. You can do one or the other, so don't get somebody else. Yep. To do it for you.
We've done book launchings, and we do the same thing. We always try to have someone there who can take the money so that the author is busy signing the book and talking to people.
Right.
You know, that's really important.
Yes.
And everything Nat just said boils down again to presenting yourself as an author. How are you presenting yourself, and how are you packaged? How have you packaged yourself, and are you prepared? Mm-hmm. Those last-minute invitations, the first thing they're going to do, Google you, come to your website. What does your website look like? How have you presented yourself on your website? And not any of that to book me as a speaker, contact. Mm-hmm. What are you going to speak about? That's my what you talking about, Willis syndrome.
Right. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I'm a speaker. Book me. Speak. And then you're just looking and you're searching. And what do they speak about? And then finally, you're just... What you talking about, Willis? What you going to talk about if I hire you to speak?
So basically, they shouldn't be putting on there what they'll be talking about.
Yes. Subject topics.
Mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago, I posted a blog on my website listing 5 new topics that I speak on. Three of them were ones that I talked about when at Joyland's conference earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
And two of them are other ones that I've done for local groups. But I'm saying, here's what I can talk about.
Right. Yeah.
Now, having a video is great. And if you can't get a video of you actually speaking, go find a room with a stage.
Yep.
Get somebody to bring in a video camera. Stage it like you're there.
Oh, like there's a crowd.
Then you get some stock photos of a crowd.
Mm.
Just use the same crowd all the time. You don't want to have it look too bizarre. And it only needs to be 90 seconds. 3 minutes at the outside.
Yeah.
Because people just want to sense that you can do it. They don't want to have the whole speech.
Right.
Every time you talk, get it videotaped. And you can edit it down. The more, the better. But if you don't have any, make it yourself. Go to your church. Yep. Go to your kid's school. Go somewhere where there's a stage, and just say, "I want to spend about an hour shooting stuff."
Yeah. When I first started preparing my video footage to promote the Act Like an Author, Think Like a Business conference, no one knew that it was just myself and my daughter. My UNLV film student in that room.
Yeah.
No one knew until I told them, until I started teaching them. Look at this information. Nobody. I would get so much feedback. This was so inspirational. This was so remarkable. I loved how you moved the crowd.
Exactly.
Okay? Stage it. But get that footage. Let us see you in action. How are you connecting with the audience? So if you can get live footage of yourself, again, Ned's correct. Always have someone videotaping you. If you have to hand them your cell phone, get footage of your speaking engagements.
You have a website. He has a website. You have your speaking engagements posted there. He has his. If someone doesn't understand exactly what you're talking about, go to those websites and learn what you've done. That's how, you know, I always tell authors all the time. They say, how can I book a radio show? How do I know who to contact here? Go to other authors. Look and see what they've done. You're not stealing anything from them. Those interviews they do, they interview lots of people. I've interviewed over 300 authors easily. Mm-hmm. So the thing is that, you know, you're not doing anything someone else hasn't done.
Yes.
So just go to our website, see what they've done, learn from them.
Yeah, James, you are absolutely right. And I tell authors this all of the time. You don't have to send other authors 10 million emails, will you mentor me, and asking all of these questions if you watch.
Right.
If you listen, the answers are all there. Find someone who is doing what you want to do and they're doing it successfully. They're great at it. Follow them. Watch them. Yep. What are they doing? What are they saying? Where are they going? Show up where they're at.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I told you I interviewed two young ladies yesterday from a little town on the East Coast. And they had a dream. They write poetry, and they also write other things as well, but poetry is what they mainly write. And they thought, well, how can we get this out there? And they're called the And I Thought Ladies, okay? And they started making a list, like 4 things at first, do this. They went to Google, and everything they learned from the internet. They've learned from Googling. If I don't know it, I'm going to check it out. Kind of like what we just said. Go to someone's website and see what they've done.
Yep.
They now have their own TV show. They have their own podcast. They have their own magazine. And they did all this on their own. They just went out there on the internet to see what someone else is doing and learn from it. And they just ran with it. I can't do that. I'm going to be honest with you. I always tell myself I'm time constrained. Maybe I need to get away from that. Maybe you can help me with that. Mm-hmm. But the point is that, you know, if you have the desire, if you want to be a best-selling author, there are ways of doing it. You just have to go out there and research and find out what you have to do to make it happen. But you have to make it happen, though.
You absolutely have to make it happen. You have to put legs and feet and arms to your dreams, vision, and goals.
Yeah, that's a very good analogy.
You have to.
Oh. Yeah.
There are ways of selling books for authors that most of them don't think about. For instance, would you like to sell 500 copies of your book in one sale?
Mm-hmm.
Contact an organization and say, I will come to you and present to your audience. This works for trade associations especially. But all you have to do is buy a book for everybody in the audience.
Ah, that's very good.
And I will come, and all you have to do is cover my expenses. So I've just sold 500 books because I'm speaking to an audience of 500 in Nashville, Tennessee, and I've sold 500 books.
Absolutely.
Now, here's another trip. I have imprinted on the cover the organization's name, a little flag on the corner. They love it, but they also can't return it if they don't sell all of them. If they're going to sell them to their members instead of give them away,
right.
They can't return them because it's got their name on it. I can't use it.
Right. Yeah.
So, but they're happy about it. I'm not like taking advantage of them. They're thrilled to have their name on it. But if you can do that and say, I will speak to your group about my subject matter, and if you, it happens best if you have a subject matter that relates, do it. But now, it doesn't have to be nonfiction. One of the great mystery writers in our country is a man named Lawrence Block. And he began writing a series about a hitman who's a really nice guy. He just killed people for a living. But other than that, he's a nice guy. And he had a hobby. Right. He was a stamp collector. And every time he went to a new town to kill somebody, he'd check out the local stamp shops and he'd buy these stamps. And there was a lot of stamp lore in his books. Suddenly, he's being asked to speak at the National Convention of Stamp Collectors. And they're paying him well to be there, plus he's signing books all day.
And he gets to kill someone along the way.
Yeah, just like his character, he gets to kill somebody. But he became known as an expert in stamp collecting, and all the fanboy stamp collectors wanted to meet a real author who had written about this. Not just a stamp collecting author, but a novelist.
Yeah.
Wow. So he sold thousands of books and got paid very well to speak at many conferences because he did that. So as you're a novelist, your character is going to have some peculiar quirk. I promise you there's an association of people who like that quirk, whether it's model railroads or stamp collecting or, poodles.
I agree, Nick.
Whatever.
Cooking.
Authors have to think outside
the box. Yeah. Or the book.
Think outside the
book. The book. I like that.
You can make a living as a writer. And I just need everyone out there who's even thought about writing, who hasn't thought about writing, because if you're in business, a book should be a part of every business. But do not allow someone to tell you that you can't make a living as a writer just because they haven't figured out how to do it. I've been doing it for over 15 years, ever since I got laid off from corporate America, and I've been teaching other authors how to do it. We did that on day three of the conference. I sell the course, make a living as a writer, and we think outside the book. So many authors make the book their business when it should simply be the foundation of the business.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like what you said. You wrote the book.
Yes.
Now you got to be the business person.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think most people have a hard time with that. You really have to want to do it. Because I have authors all the time who I'll listen to them before or after the show, and I realize they've talked themselves out of it. I can't go do this and I can't do that. And you're talking yourself out of it is what you're doing. Instead of saying, I can't, at least try, if you can at least give it a try. You don't know if you don't try.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm scared to death to go out there. I did it.
Yeah.
Of course, Tanya Todd kind of talked me into doing it, but but we have to do the things we're afraid of doing.
Yeah, and there's a way to get around that, too, a very simple way. There's an organization called Toastmasters, and this is people who want to improve their speaking ability, public speaking. You go to the meetings, you give a short talk, You get nothing but positive feedback. They have a policy of no blood on the floor. They do not attack you.
Ah.
They encourage you. They find anything that you've done wrong and find a way to turn it into something you could do right.
Uh-huh.
And you get a chance to practice. And once you're comfortable with speaking in front of this audience, you can speak in other audiences. And yeah. as you know, being here in Vegas, if you wanted to speak to a convention, the floor speaker's fee is going to be $2,500 for an hour.
Yeah.
Would you like to make $2,500 an hour?
That
I know I would.
Good to me.
Yeah. I would. Plus, you get a chance to sell your books. But wherever you live, there are conventions that come to town. They may not all pay $2,500 as a threshold, but hey, if they pay you $1,000 for an hour,
or $500 even.
$500, yeah.
Not too many people make that kind of money.
If you make $500 for a half hour talk, if you were able to do that nonstop full time, you'd be a millionaire.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Because I did a talk for $500 once, and I did the math and figured it out that if I could just do that for
all the time
for 2,080 hours a year, I'd make over $1 million. So that that kind of encouraged me to do more of it.
Yeah.
And James, you mentioned something about fear, and a lot of times that fear keeps that person from ever even putting their message out there. You hear it all of the time. Well, I'm not a writer, so I don't even know where to start. I'm not a writer. It won't be good. It won't be great. So they don't even try. And I tell people, you don't have to be a writer to be a successful author. You don't even have to love writing to be a successful author. You hear it a lot.
Yeah.
I write for the love of it. You don't have to love writing. You don't have to love writing. You just have to have this message inside of you, this thought, this idea, this concept.
Yep.
Utilize your intellectual property. Utilize the resources out here, ghostwriters, book coaches, literary consultants.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the first.
I've ghostwritten 15 books.
And that's what I was going to say. That's what's interesting is he's talked about how he ghostwrote these books, but now they go out there and present themselves as the author.
Right.
So you're right.
Well, one of my clients... I ghostwrote his book for him, and then he retained me to market and promote it. He wound up becoming the American Marketing Association's Healthcare Marketer of the Year based on a book that I wrote for him. And, hey, I was perfectly happy. He paid me well to do the book. I was glad that he got that title based on my experiences. I was perfectly comfortable with that because I made a living.
Yes.
And that's what I wanted to do. As Joellen says, you can make a living. Especially, you know, ghostwriting, you have to put your ego aside.
Yes.
If this is about your ego, you're in the wrong business.
Right. I agree with you on that.
Yes. Yes.
And I do know people who insist on their name being on the book as well. But, you know, I think what you said, you're smart because you're also you're doing the ghostwriting, but you take a percentage. Is that what you said?
That was the one-time deal. No, I would much rather be paid up front, than take a percentage.
Okay.
That the percentage... It if I hadn't been able to give that book away to the right person, I would have never made more than $500. And that's I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. This book, just to give you a perspective, I approached the client on December 2nd. She said, "Fine, but I have to have the book finished and at a trade show on January 14th."
Oh my goodness!
I had 6 weeks. Now this was December 2nd. December 21st, my son got married in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So we had to be there. I wrote most of the book. We stayed with some friends, and I was sitting at the kitchen table writing the book while Christmas happened, the wedding happened, all this kind of stuff. I got it done on time. It was worth a lot more to me than $500.
Yeah.
It was worth $151,000 is what it turned out to be worth.
Uh-huh. Right.
But if I had... I will never do strictly a commission basis again. Mm-hmm. I will take a percentage of sales, but they got to pay me up front.
Absolutely. I've done the ghostwriting as well. And like you said, Ned, your ego, you definitely have to put that aside. You get that lump sum of money, which I prefer to be paid up front. Mm-hmm. I prefer not to get any type of kickback on royalties, things of that nature. Because that way, you know, you have to rely on the author. Are they going to market? Are they going to promote? Do they even have a budget? And if none of that happens, you don't make any money off of this project you've spent all of this time and hours and missing Christmas on.
Right.
So what you learn as the ghostwriter is to get rid of the ego and say, you know what? I don't care whose name was on the marquee as long as they spell my name right on the check.
And I have to agree with you. Yes. I've done some ghostwriting myself. I never made anything off of one.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, the royalties were never paid to me.
Yeah.
So my name was never on the book either. But, you know, and I agree with you. It's better just do something up front for the money and that's it. You know,
right.
Don't ask for percentages. Just get the money up front.
The man who wrote the book Iacocca, which was a huge bestseller in the early 1980s. He got $40,000 for it. I asked him, you didn't get royalties. How do you feel about that? He says, I got $40,000. He says, in money today, that's about $125,000. Mm-hmm. That was a nice check for me to get.
Right.
I was glad to do it without worrying about the royalties. Nobody knew if it would sell or not. Nobody
and that's the thing. You're not taking the risk.
Right.
Yeah. The person who's presenting it is taking the risk.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So, that you know, I agree with you. And plus, it keeps you going while you're doing your other things. You know,
yes.
While you're doing your books, while you're promoting, you know, writing and promoting your own work.
Exactly.
Yes. So, you know.
Exactly. And when I ghostwrite, I set it up on a monthly basis. So I get a month-to-month retainer. I know if this is going to take 8 months to do, I'm going to get 8 checks.
Mm-hmm.
I can count on that as steady income. And I know how much time I have to devote during that month. So, it, as you say, it underwrites my other efforts that I do that I will only get paid if I succeed in selling it to a publisher or if I sell it to a large number of people individually.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
How important is networking?
Networking is key. No man is an island.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a village to publish a book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stealing that from Mark Coker,
yeah.
the founder
yeah.
of Smashwords. It takes an entire village. You have to meet and you have to get out there to network. And I'm not just talking about readers. With authors, we think we need to go to these conventions that are these fun conventions or these fun conferences that
right.
are reader targeted.
Right.
When you should be going to business conferences, writing conferences, publishing conferences, and networking with those like-minded individuals who we learned at the Path to Publishing Conference this past September are experts in a certain area, in a certain field, where you guys mm-hmm. could complement one another. A lot of times as authors, we feel like we're competing with each other.
Yeah.
We're not. We're complementing one another. We're connecting with one another.
Mm-hmm.
We're collaborating with one another.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have a shoestring budget? Let's barter. Let's operate on what my grandmother called the quality of sharing.
Everyone sitting at this table is here because of networking.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Including you, Jen.
Yes.
And I think that people fail to understand what networking is all about.
Yes.
Networking isn't just going to a convention. Networking is meeting people mm-hmm. like yourselves. You know, I met Jen right. through another author.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mentored her on the air. That's how she got on the air.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes to you, I met you at you were actually doing a conference, and Tanya Todd invited me to that conference. Ned, I know you know Tanya,
yeah.
and you've worked with her with Henderson's Writers Group.
Yes.
We actually, you were at a
yeah.
thing where I was invited to do a speech
exactly.
on yeah on
and
fundraising.
And then social media networking as well.
Right.
Get off of social media. Turn it into a conference call. Turn it into a Skype, a Zoom, a FaceTime, whatever you need to do. Get off of social media and form that true connection and then that relationship and then perhaps that partnership.
Yeah. yeah.
Let me tell you about one networking example. I was flying to Dallas and I was sitting next to a guy on a plane. And we started talking, and it turns out that he was Rudy from the movie Rudy. He was the real Rudy. He'd written the book.
Okay. I have his phone number right over here.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, he was going to Dallas to speak at a multi-level marketing conference.
Mm-hmm.
He was being paid $10,000, which was a nice fee.
Yes.
I mean, this was 20 years ago. It was a nice mm-hmm. fee then. It was a, you know.
It's a nice fee now.
Yeah. But here's the thing. He said that the people who brought him in are the leaders in that downline of multi-level marketing. Well, those people change companies every year or two, and they take all their people with them because then they get all the initial commissions again
right.
and all
right.
that. He says, this is the fourth time I've spoken before this guy's conference, but it's been for four different audiences. Each
yeah.
time he made $10,000. One networking, one connection.
Mm-hmm.
He's done four. That doesn't count the books he sold.
Wow.
I mean, that was just the fee he got, 10 grand each. Which was, in today's money, I'm talking $25,000 a pop, which is not bad money, but doing it four times through one connection.
I'll tell you about him. I met him 20 years ago.
Okay.
He was writing a children's story. I don't think he ever finished it. And I met him. We were doing, I actually had aspects of writing at that time
yeah.
as a free lecture at Borders Books on Sahara mm-hmm. Decatur. But anyway, a friend of mine introduced me to him. We talked about his book, and I wasn't sure where he was going to go with it. The next time I met him was at a book signing conference, and I think it was Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there for an autograph session. And we talked about the show. As a matter of fact, I said, Rudy, when are you going to be on the show? He just got around to answering me about 2 weeks ago from an email I sent him a year ago.
Okay.
But the thing is that eventually I will get him on this show.
Right.
Yes.
When he has the time, because he's very busy. But the thing is that that's networking.
Yeah.
If I don't meet him here, I'll run into him here. I'll run into him there. You know, yeah. Every time I've met him, it's through a different venue or avenue.
Right.
And networking is so important. With Tanya, Tanya has brought me to Dime Grinds, which mm-hmm. is where I did the thing where I met the two of you.
Right.
Actually, I'd met you before then
yes.
with the Henderson Writers Group
exactly.
at a different lecture 6 months earlier. That networking really does make a difference. Just from that the event that I was at with Dime Grinds where I did the reading in my book,
right.
I had two of those authors on just 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Wow.
The networking process is amazing. I went to the Star Trek convention a few months ago here in Las Vegas. I met R. Thomas McPherson, who's an author and owns New Atlantic Industries, which they're a publishing company as well. I had gone to the opening of Copper Cat Books. The owners there, you know, called me and said, could we do something on your show? And I said, sure. I'm going to have a guy on named R. Robert McPherson. They go, we know Robert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were on the show together. This whole networking thing, how many people know each other along the way? This is an interesting story, too. This was going back about a year and a half ago. I had some local authors on, and I had this one guy. I go on the internet a lot, and I try to find quotes. Sometimes we start our show with fun quips and quotes.
Yeah.
And I found this one quote. I really liked it, and I put it in, and I assigned it to an author to read on the air. He comes in prior to the show, and he's reading this. He goes, oh, I know this person. And I said, oh, you know that author? Now, I had contacted the author in the meantime thinking maybe I can get him on my show because he's
sure.
done quite well, and you're probably going to know who I'm talking about in a minute. So I don't know where he's from. I actually emailed him and said, what time zone are you in?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the author who's going to be reading this on there goes, yeah, I know him, Gerard Demergeny. Yeah, you know, he's a good friend. And I'm going, really? How do you know him? Well, he lives here.
Yeah. Had no idea where
now, I end up emailing him back. He's going to be on the show. He said he agreed to be on the show. He's 5 minutes walking distance from where I was during the show.
Wow.
I mean, it was amazing how networking can work and how much we all really know each other and can interact.
Yes.
And really help each other.
Yes.
Yeah. And you brought up Tanya Todd, and she schedules people for Dime Grinds, which is a monthly event, first Sunday of every month here in Vegas, where three authors get up and read from their books, talk about how they wrote their books, and then sell their books to everybody in the room that's interested and autograph them and like that. Knowing people like that, she's also a remarkably good author. I love her written work. But knowing somebody like that can be a game changer for you for your career. It's a place to get started. There are people out there that are worth knowing, bookstore owners, obviously, are people to talk to, but you never know who you're going to connect with. And Tanya has been a great help to me, and I've tried to return the favor with her. And she's got some things coming up that Joylyn and I have talked about that I'm not at liberty to mention yet, but we're looking forward to it.
Yes, absolutely. Tanya, I told Tanya, that's her superpowers. She's this literary superhero, and that is her superpower. She is the bridge that connects us all.
Yeah.
And wherever you live, there is somebody like Tanya out there.
Yes.
All you need to do is get to know her and or him and then start connecting, because that's what she does. That's what these people do. So networking, you never know when you're going to reach somebody that was, you know, I had no idea I was going to meet Rudy when I sat down on the plane. And yet he was there. He loves himself. He loves talking about himself. I don't mean that in a negative sense. Look where it's gotten him.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not speaking at $10,000 a pop conferences.
No, you have to have that confidence.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it goes full circle to what you said. You know, with most authors, you're not thinking about having to approach people and, hey, I'm an author and buy my book. You're just writing this book. But then it goes back to what you said about merchandising. Wear the hat. Wear the T-shirt.
Right.
Sip out of the mug. Put yourself in a position. Present yourself where someone will perhaps approach you and strike up the conversation.
Right.
I taught a course at what was then the Community College of Southern Nevada. It's now the College of Southern Nevada, called Writing for Star Trek.
Okay.
Because I had written for Star Trek. And I had written for Star Trek over a period of time, and then people changed, and my connections were gone, and I was no longer writing for Star Trek. But I was able to make money teaching a course on writing and selling for Star Trek. And the room was packed. I had a lot of people there who wanted to do it, and I was able to share what I knew about it. You can make money in many ways. James Michener famously said that you can in America you could become very wealthy as an author, but you couldn't make a living. Well, Joylyn and I prove that that's not true.
Well, a lot of people have proved that wrong.
But you have to think outside the book, as she said. You have to think about, okay, I'm going to write, and maybe it's not always the great American novel. Maybe it's a press release for somebody or a brochure or a booklet they have that they need or something else. There's all kinds of writing that you can do.
Blurbs, sound bites.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have someone on my team who gets paid to read authors' books and pull out sound bites so that they can use it for social media marketing.
Wow.
And sometimes things could – one time I was driving between – Mississippi and Louisiana, going between two clients, and I get a call from somebody and says, I need a TV commercial script. We're shooting tomorrow.
Ah.
So I pulled over to a Holiday Inn, went into the bar, sat down in longhand, wrote out a TV commercial. Half an hour later, I phoned it into them. They shot it as I wrote it. It earned an Addie Award for the guy who did it. But I got paid. I'm thrilled that I got an Addy Award, but I was more thrilled that I got paid for writing something that took me a half an hour. And I got well paid for it. It wasn't the time involved. It was that I knew how to write TV commercials, and I knew the subject matter.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you're out there promoting yourself, and let's just be honest, when I'm out there attending the events, I'm out there promoting myself. I'm out there looking for people to interview. I don't make any bones about that.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that from the Grime Dines that I did, I went to your convention afterward, and because you graciously invited me. And then from there, because of that whole thing, I had two authors on who happened to know someone named Renee Winters. Do you know Renee?
Yes, I know Renee.
Well, Renee was just here this last week. She's going to be on my show in 2 weeks. I mean, it's amazing how this works. And to give you another example of what you're talking about today, in that you can't just be the author, there's a misconception that if you have a name, like Rudy, Daniel, then that automatically sells you. And in some ways it does. It says if there's a movie made after you, for instance, that's definitely can't hurt. Yeah. But I had Don Lewis Barnhart on my show many, many times.
Yes.
And he was a director in Hollywood for 40 years.
Right.
He had his own radio show prior to that for 10 years on an LA station. Don wrote 4 novels, and they're good. Jan, you've read them.
Oh, they're fantastic.
But the thing is that he assumed... this is no way knocking Don, because I love Don dearly. He died a year and a half ago. But the thing is that Don automatically assumed, and he told me this, he assumed because he had a name in Hollywood for 40 years, he was the one who directed almost every episode of Saved by the Bell. He did some directing on Mork and Mindy, Benson, several other shows. That would sell his books. But guess what? That did not sell his books. He couldn't get his books in the store. And when he came on our show, we had him on to talk about his books. We got him in Barnes & Noble to sell his books. So I'm glad we did that. At least he got to do that.
Right.
But the thing is you can't assume, even if you have a name, that that's going to sell you.
No.
Again, what you said, Joylyn, you have to stop being the author and put the business hat on.
Yes.
It's time to be the business person now. The author's done. You've written it. You're the writer. You wrote it. You're the author. Now be the business person.
Right.
Exactly.
And that's the hardest part for people to grasp and understand. And we can sit here and talk about this all day, but that doesn't always boost your confidence. Hopefully, people listening, it will help them a little bit and get them out of that, safe zone and go out there. Don't be afraid to humiliate yourself. That's what I tell people. Don't be afraid to humiliate yourself. I love those girls who were on yesterday. I'm telling you, because they did. They don't care what anyone thinks. Mm-hmm. They're having fun. And I think that's what you've got to learn to do, too. When you put that business hat on, have fun with it.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be scary. I make it scary. Yeah. If I'm out there and I'm afraid, it's because I'm doing that to myself.
That's a good point.
Yes.
Very good.
Yes.
So anyone have anything to add before we tie this up?
Well, and you make a good point, because something else that a lot of people don't know about you is you're a very shy person. But you will promote somebody else. You will get out in front of the crowd and promote somebody else without blinking an eyeball.
When I have an author I'm promoting, I'm out there in front of that store handing out their bookmark saying, you know, here's a free bookmark. And, oh, and by the way, this author happens to be in the store today, you know.
Yeah.
You're the epitome of what I call learning how to shine without having to be the star.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what. Yeah.
I'm like you. I'm very comfortable promoting somebody else. It's a large part of what I do for a living. But when it's come to me, I had to learn how to do it. I had to learn how to do it twice. Mm-hmm. The first time I learned that if I had a few drinks, I was much more comfortable doing it. Until the point
and
when
the
I
secret
the,
is.
The two a few drinks became alcoholism.
Yeah.
But when I beat that, then I had to learn that. Because I was then the guy over in the corner talking to the potted palm. Uh-huh. I had to learn to come out of my shell because I was terribly shy without any help. And over time, I was able to do it. But I'm still more comfortable promoting somebody else than I am myself.
Well, authors we're going to have to cut this short because we are literally running out of time and it's going to shut off on us here. All right. So first of all, I'd like to thank Joylynn and Ned for being on the show. And I wanted you, Ned, please give us a website where we can go learn about your books and your work.
Okay. It's Barnett Marketing Communication. The URL is barnettmarcom.com.
All right. And Joylynn?
Path to Publishing. That's T-O, not the numeral two. www.pathtopublishing.com. But for a free introductory publishing course, you can visit www.joylynnmross.com.
All right. And again, I'd like to thank Joylynn and Ned for being on the show. I'd like to encourage our listeners to please write us. Tell us what you'd like to hear. Tell us what topics you'd like for us to discuss. And give us your experiences. Doesn't matter where you are. If you're in New York, you're in Minneapolis, if you're in Paris, if you're in Sydney, Australia, we can interview you. Just write us. Let us know you're interested. I don't care if you're a newbie, just learning to write. If you've written 20 novels and you're 10 million copies out there, that's great. We'll interview you. I'd like to also thank our guest again and Janet Corsi for being on the show today.
Thank you.
To find links to our show, just go to aspectsofwriting.com. That's aspectsofwriting.com. You'll learn more about our guest. We always post their picture there and links where you can find their websites. This show will also be archived on our show. Just go to aspectsofwriting.com and archived on the website there. We're also on archived on amfm247.com. We're syndicated on amfm247.com. At 1 o'clock on Saturdays, the live show is out of Florida, and then it goes on syndication from there to different outlets, including iHeart, iTunes. Oh, my God, there's
Roku.
So many. Roku TV. Yeah. We do a video portion as well. I also put the show on Blog Talk Radio at 9 o'clock.
Sunday.
Yeah, Sundays at Pacific Standard Time, or I think they call it Pacific Daylight Time now. You know, so just go there at 8 o'clock, and you can hear the show again on Sundays. We also have two new sister shows coming up. We have Senior Aspects, which is out now. It broadcasts on Blog Talk Radio at 8 o'clock Pacific Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. And then we're going to be launching the Common Thread radio show starting this next week. So just go to Aspects of Writing to learn more about both of those shows as well.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. So until next week, this is your host, James Kelly, reminding you, if you can dream it, you can write it. Thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Aspects of Writing. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss every aspect of the writing industry. Until then, if you can dream it, you can write it.
I don't think